Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to a little bit of a late start here tonight on the Double. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. Huge show tonight. Two big time guests as normal, but these are extra, extra large.
Man, you know what, Sean? We have to give it to our engineer, Doug Newsom, man, bringing us in with the song Problems. Man, we were having a few problems trying to get on the air here. No fault to our engineer, of course, but trying to get things connected for the show. And Sean Wally, as we had talked before going on the air, problems for our favorite NFL teams, man.
No doubt about that. You know, there was a time when I was watching, of course, your Raider game at the same time as the Seahawk game. So the entire West Coast, depending where you live, you're either getting the Raider game or you're getting the Seahawk game. And there was a time I thought you guys had the game in hand. Things were going well. Carr was zipping passes to Cooper and Crabtree and touchdowns were happening. And all of a sudden, then I see the Falcons woke up and, down in south of you in California, still in Los Angeles, the Seahawks couldn't figure out anything on offense. And for whatever reason, somebody's got a voodoo doll that likes the Rams, and the Seahawks cannot figure out a way to beat the Rams.
Well, yeah, you know, that's been the talk as far as the Rams always playing the Seahawks well. And that's been, for the past 8 years. The Rams have done a good job. And, of course, as you were mentioning, it was the opening day for the Los Angeles Rams. First time since 1994. So, I'm thinking the Seattle Seahawks had a tough go last week. How many points? I believe they scored 15 points last week. And, going down to Los Angeles, you would think that they would go out and smash the Rams, especially after losing 28-0 to the San Francisco 49ers the week before. And then, this game happens. And who knows, man? You can never figure out football. 9-3 in favor of the Rams. So the other thing is that, of course, the game that you were talking about, my game up here in Northern California, the Oakland Raiders taking on the Atlanta Falcons. Sean Wally, that was it was an exciting game if you like to see points put on the board. But I got to tell you, man, start to finish, it looked pretty sketchy. I know that the Raiders jumped out, moving the ball up the field, but so did Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons. And so, this is a loss, though, for their home opener. I know there's some great things that were to be expected in Oakland. But again, there's two games into the season. They're 500, and things could be worse.
That's right, Sean. And the NFL season is crazy. And somebody on the line right now knows a lot about what's going on in the crazy world of the Major League Baseball season. And that is former Major League Baseball player, second baseman, Brett Boone. Brett, thanks for your time tonight.
How you doing, guys?
Great. Hey, thanks for being on the Double here, Brett. And I'm so happy to have you on. Man, I want to get right to it. I see some cool things as of late. I know that you're promoting. I believe you have a book coming out here pretty soon.
No, it's out.
Oh, it is out. Okay, I'm sorry. I know that you have been posting some things as far as the bat flip, man. And if there is anything that is signature, it is the Brett Boone bat flip. And for those of us who you know, watch that in the Pacific Northwest, watching Mariners baseball. Man, that's probably one of the sweeter things that we've ever seen.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I am just a very layman, very infantile when it comes to social media. And I just started doing it with the book coming out and a few other projects I have. You know, and building your fan base, it seemed like the people, that's what they want to see. It's like, we want bat flips, but more bat flips and more bat flips. So, yeah, you've seen a few of my posts, and, you know, I hope it doesn't get old. I'm gonna run out of different angles to show it to you from. But it seems like that's what people love. I mean, they really respond to that. And, yeah, you know, I did that, obviously, when I played. But I didn't realize, you know, years later now, that's one of the main things that baseball fans remember is the bat flip. So, you know, I have fun with it. Don't take it too serious. And, yeah, but it's interesting. Yeah, you've seen a few posts.
Now, Brett, you've mentioned, you know, don't take it too serious. Now, let's take when you played to today, you know, to today's game. It mm-hmm. seems like the pitchers are a little more sensitive to these bat flips. I mean, what's changed over the years?
Well, I think the bat flips, you know, mine was your typical, I kind of have a signature move where, you know, I did the same thing every time. Whereas I'd hit it, flip, and I'd be on my way to first. Nowadays, you know, guys are stopping, they're watching, they're arrogantly flipping it, you know, almost to say F you. I never did it that way. I didn't, you know, I started doing bat flips. Basically, first of all, it was the natural way the bat came out of my hand. It just automatically released like that. But then, you know, there was pitchers out there. It started with Dennis Eckersley. He'd shoot me when he'd strike me out. He'd shoot me down. I kind of look at him. And I really didn't get angry. It just kind of fired me up of, you know, okay, that's what you do. That's your game. That makes you the pitcher you are. Well, and then I just added the bat flip, and that was the hitter I was. I didn't mean any disrespect. It was just kind of a, okay, I got you, and I'm running around the bases. Nowadays, everything is kind of accentuated today, you know, and I look at it. I mean, I see pinch runners, you know, doing the cabbage patch when they get to second base. I'm like, you're lucky to have a uniform on and you're pimping yeah. stuff. Like you're not Ken Griffey. You're the 25th man on the roster. And I think that's just the way the times are now, you know. A lot of us guys that played in the 90s and the early 2000s, you know, we're kind of old school. But, you know, the more and more I watch the game, I kind of let go some of my old thoughts of old school and you play the game a certain way. I think the new wave, there's a lot of things I don't like about the game. But there's a lot of things I do like. And it started this year. I've just been paying attention quite a bit. And it started with the All-Star game. It's just these kids are just having fun. And they're young and they're vibrant and they're so athletic. And it's just the way they're expressing themselves. And it's kind of accepted nowadays that everybody has a little something, you know, base hit to right, you get to first, and you put the spotlight on you. And it's just the way it's just kind of accepted, you know. Even 20 years ago, that wouldn't have been accepted at all. But nowadays, it's just the way it is. And I've softened my stance on this old school stance that I've always had and think, you know, they seem to be having a lot of fun. It's definitely a very youthful game and a very athletic game. I think that the players are getting better and better as we go on, which they should. And I think in every sport, you know, just look at the other sports in football and basketball. Game of basketball has elevated so much just in 20, 30 years. These guys just playing above the rim. The football players, it's getting to the point where it's dangerous. These guys are so fast, and they're so strong and hit each other so hard. It's just the evolution of the game. I mean, and I think as time goes on, everybody gets bigger, stronger, faster, you know, with the technology and the techniques and the training that the athletes do nowadays. Every sport can't help but get better and better. So, once again, I have definitely softened my stance, but still sometimes I see a guy that's, you know, he maybe plays once or twice a week doing something a little out of character, and I'm thinking, well, I thought you kind of had to deserve to do stuff like that, you know, earn it and establish yourself first. But like I said, I'm not taking it personal. I'm just enjoying the game. I'm a fan of this game, always will be. And it's just the way it is nowadays.
former Major League Baseball player Brett Boone joining us here on the Double. And Brett, it is September, and there is meaningful baseball being played by some, including your former team, the Seattle Mariners, having a shot at the wild card, a big series with the Toronto Blue Jays going on, three-game series starting right now in Seattle. What do you think is going on through the minds of those players, and how can they overcome their two-game deficit in the wild card?
Well, you know, I haven't really paid attention to the Mariners. I've tried to for about 10 years now because they haven't been any good. And all of a sudden, I was up in Seattle earlier this year, and, you know, I knew they were better. The core players were better, especially in the offensive side. And it started happening right around when Griffey got his jersey retired and up in Seattle, and it was a great weekend. And I think they ended up sweeping the homestand. And they won six straight, and I think they went on to win 9 out of 11, and they were winning all the close games and doing what they needed to do just to win. And I was up there for a few days. I think it was for my book. And I was just watching something. You know, I was just watching the game from the press box, and I saw something different. You know, there was electricity in the crowd. They were getting back into it, and I haven't seen that, like I said, in a long time. And there was just something special going on. It's like these guys knew they were going to win, but maybe it was a little bit of a tease because then they went on the next road trip and went 1-6 or something like that. And now, you know, they're kind of playing with the people's emotions in Seattle. It's like, are you going to go get in? Are you not? And then they would just rattled off 8 in a row and came home and lost 2 to Houston. So it's definitely exciting. Seattle will always be, you know, what I consider my home. So I'm always, you know, I'm pulling for them and I pull for the Seahawks. And they've definitely got a core group. That middle of the lineup for Seattle is the real deal. And I think they can rival pretty much anybody in Major League Baseball. With Cano and Cruz and Seager. And there's a lot of role players doing a good job, too. You know, Seth Smith got into it, Lind with the power this year. And, you know, it's just their pitching. They've got some exciting new pitchers. The closer, Diaz, has been pretty electric. You know, he went through a little bit of a struggle, but he's been pretty much electric and exciting to watch. But at this stage of the season and in the postseason, it always comes down to the pitching and do they have enough, and I'm not sure they do, but I'm definitely pulling for them. This is kind of the make or break. I mean, I think this is Seattle season right now. You got the Blue Jays in town. They've been scuffling a little bit, and they've really got to take advantage of this series, you know, at least win 2 out of 3. I mean, you can't get greedy and say sweep them, but they've got to win 2 out of 3, I think. They've won 2 out of 3, you know, they're right there at the door, just a game out. If you lose 2 out of 3 now, all of a sudden you're 3 or 4 games out, and you might be in trouble this late in the season. But it's definitely exciting, bringing a little bit of that excitement that I was fortunate enough to have in the early 2000s. And I can say, you know, when you do win in Seattle, they'll come out and watch you and support you. And it's the most fun I've ever had in the game, you know, that right in the 2000 to 2003. I mean, we were packed every night, and there was just a buzz in the crowd. Similar to what's going on for the Seahawks. You know, I go down there for a football game, and, you know, you've got 60,000 people just going crazy. And it's really fun for the fan up in the Northwest.
Now, Brett, you've been around Seattle for the good times in the Mariner organization and in your early career, the not exactly winning ways in Seattle.
Yeah, they were a little lead.
Exactly, and you've touched on how since your success in 2000, 2001, things have been lean, to use your word, in Seattle since then. Do you think that's a mindset in the organization, or how do they turn that around and
I think they've started in the right direction, you know, this year. There's new management now, new general manager, new coaching staff. And I think they've started to go in the positive direction. You know, I don't remember the last time they had a core group of players on the field that really worked well together. And, you know, to mention those three again, the Seager, Cruz, and Robinson Cano, if Seattle were to win the division, I mean, not win the division, if they were to get into the postseason, these guys are going to be right in the middle of MVP. All three of them, you know, should get some votes. It'd be tough to pick one. They're just all having tremendous years. They're all legitimate star players. And that's a core. And you know, Robinson and Cruz are a little older. Seager's a little younger, but they're still all in their prime of their career. So I think they got several more years together where they can do a lot of damage. Like I said, they've got some exciting young live arms out on the pitching staff. Felix is still the staple. You know, he's had his ups and downs with an injury and going on the DL this year, but he's still Felix. And it's just whether they have enough pitching to get to that wild card spot. I don't know. I hope they do, but it's definitely it should be exciting.
Brett Boone joining us here on the double. And Brett, I do have to apologize to you. You mentioned your book. It's already out. It's been out since May. Home Game is the name of the book, Big League Stories from My Life in Baseball's First Family. Of course, this book it talks about, Dad Bob and yourself and your brothers playing. Kind of give us a little insight on the book.
Well, it's interesting. I never thought I'd ever write a book. I'm not one to – I think there's certain things in baseball that are sacred, and the clubhouse is one of them, So if you're – to read it and think you're going to get a lot of dirt, you're not going to. But, I had some book companies kind of courting me for about a year, and I never thought I'd want to write a book. And then we came up with, write about, from the beginning with your grandfather. It started in 48. Through current, my grandfather was a huge influence in my life, especially my baseball life. Starting from him, going through my dad and my childhood growing up and, in big league clubhouses, and then my career and of course, my brother's career. It was just a very unique perspective. I think that probably I'm the only one in the world that could tell the story with that many members and that many generations that have played this game at a high level. So I went into it kind of pessimistically. Let's be honest, Random House made me an offer I couldn't refuse. Let's get that out of the way.
That's always good.
But once I got into it and I got a ghostwriter, and he was very good at relaying my message and worked very closely with me on the editing and stuff like that. Once I got into it a little bit and I was reading it back and we were, we'd go through a chapter, then we'd edit the chapter, then we'd go on to the next chapter. And once I got to about 3, 4, 5 chapters, it was kind of cool for me just reminiscing and telling old stories. Like I said, my grandfather was a huge influence in my life. That was my buddy, Gramps was. So just telling the old stories and bringing back a lot of the memories of my childhood and even when I got into my pro career and just sitting around the table at Thanksgiving and having my grandfather telling stories about Ted Williams and my dad talking about his days in Philly with Pete Rose and Carlton, and then Aaron and myself sitting there telling him, the players today are much better than you guys. And just to watch them get all excited, no, nobody threw harder than Bob Feller. my dad would say, Steve Carlton's slider was the best. And Aaron and myself would kind of tease him. But get them going, get them all worked up, and tell them how much better the players were now. But I think that's, looking back, I mean, those are real special things that not too many people, not anybody gets to witness. I can sit there and my grandpa can tell me 10 stories, and believe me, he told me every story he had 10 times. But, I mean, he had, close-up stories about Ted Williams and Bob Feller and Harmon Killen, all these people, it was firsthand knowledge, and it was just really interesting, and it brought back some really cool memories. And I just thought that point in the book is, I'm able to share this with people and kind of let them see what went on behind the curtain. I don't know if that's a good analogy or not, but it's really interesting stuff. There's some cool stories, and I definitely get into the politics of the game, and I get into some other things too. There's some chapters in there that are strictly educational, as far as the game and how to think as a hitter and how my career went from being a young player, brash player, to being humbled several times to my first All-Star game, to learning how to be a complete hitter, when I went back to Seattle and sat down with Edgar Martinez and picked his brain. So there's a lot of educational stuff in it as well. But overall, and the funny thing is I had to do the audio version of the book. I did in my voice. So that was the worst job I've ever had in my life. It was 3 6-hour days of reading and listening to your own voice, which most of us can't stand hearing it. But so I did that, and I really had to read the book out loud. And I'll be honest with you, some of the chapters, some of the paragraphs, when I was reading it out loud for the audio version, I was thinking, did I really say that? But for the most part, I'm pretty happy with it. And I think it's a pretty easy read. You know, it's not like it's tough to get through it. So, you know, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of my family. And you know, who knows? It's doing pretty well. It was on the bestseller list in July. I haven't really checked on it lately. But, you know, I'm proud of it. And like I said, it's not a dirt book. You know, it's not going to be a Jose Canseco book or a Lenny Dykstra book. This is it's a book about my family and the heritage, and starting from Grandpa the Patriarch and just going through the generations.
Now, Brett, people who know you, and of course you being on the show now, I'm getting a different light from you. Of course, you're 5'10". There's questions from scouts, and you know, does he have a lack of power? You know, on the outside looking in, you know, we talk about the bad flip, the cocky attitude, but you're none of those things, man. Well, of course you're 5'10", but I mean, you're humble. You're a humble man. And
well, you know, that's the thing about it is in sports, it's the bad flip and all that. I mean, the people that know me know the real me. And basically when I was playing this game, I didn't really care about anyone on the other side of the field. I just thought, I'm going to play the game the way it's supposed to be played. I'm going to bust my butt every night. That's my job. It's from 7 to 10 every night is to play this game as hard as I can play it. And I didn't care what the opponent thought, but I demanded that the opponent's going to respect me. And that's all I ever cared about. I know who I'm playing for, and that's those guys in the room with me, those 25 guys. And so that my teammates that I've been around, they all know the real me. I mean, the bat flip and the cocky attitude, that was, I'll admit, that's kind of a shtick. And that's kind of something I stuck to. You know, the camera would be in front of me, and it's like I would say some things. But my teammates expected me to do that. It was kind of my role on that Seattle team, is I had to be the brash one out front of the train. And I was kind of the guy that kind of led the way. And my teammates would just sit there and laugh, and they loved it. But it was kind of like a role I was playing. So, you know what, I've been around this game so long. You know, I've been this all I've done since I was 2 years old. And believe me, I've been through some humble times in this game. You know, and when I was young, I was brash and as cocky and as sure of myself as you could possibly be. And I got through the minor leagues real quick my first year. And I remember coming up to the big leagues, and my first at bat, I got a base hit off Arthur Rhodes, and I got to first. And, you know, I forget who was playing first, but he said, you got 2,999 to go. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, shit, I'm going to get way more than that. Oh, I don't know if I can say that. And that was the first time. And a month and a half later, I'm sitting in my locker with some teammates hitting 198 going, wow, big leagues is hard. So that was my first humble pie. Then I had some great years and I had some down years, but I never took myself too serious. And my persona and that character that you'd see out there was just that. It was a character. It was a shtick. It was something I did for my team. But when that game was going on, I was as serious as could be. But I felt this, you've got to enjoy playing this game. And when we had downtime and we were around the teammates, you know, we'd clown around with the best of them. You know, put a camera in front of us, and yeah, we're going to have a good time with it. But at the end of the day, I respected how hard this game was. You know, when I was having great years, believe me, I didn't take that for granted, because I knew how hard it was to have great years, and they don't happen every year. Like I said, I've been in this game forever. I've seen it all. I've seen, you know, a great, great family around me, an awesome role model in my father, who we're oil and water. You know, one's out there and kind of in your face, that's me, and he's just the real humble fatherly figure that just brought his lunch pail to work every day. And he was a great role model for me. You know, people ask me all the time, I didn't learn anything from my dad as far as baseball went. He didn't teach me how to catch, didn't teach me how to throw, teach me how to hit. But what he did teach me was how to be a big league player and how to be a professional and how to go back to business. And, you know, he's just a high, high character guy. And, you know, I'm blessed. I've got an awesome family, very proud of everything that we've accomplished. And now I've, you know, I'm father of four kids and doing the best job I can to help them grow up and be good people. And if they, you know, I've got one that just signed a letter of intent with Princeton. He's going to go play shortstop down in New Jersey for Princeton, which I'm so proud of. I mean, I'm a USC guy. That's where I went to college. But I've been wearing the Princeton shirts around, and it's almost like I'm walking up to people saying, "Ask me why I'm wearing this." You know, because I didn't qualify to go to Princeton when I was in high school. So that's what I'm doing now. I still love the game. You know, like I said, I'm keeping tabs on the Mariners every night because I'd like to see them get there. You know, because I realize what an awesome city that is. And I'm a fan of the game, but I've got other things that I do too now. And, you know, with this book, and I got a suit company, I got a bunch of different goofy things going on, but I'm having fun and I'm getting to watch my kids grow up.
Brett Boone joining us here on the Double. And you mentioned the suit company. I will throw it out there. SuitClubVIP.com, Suit Club Dressed for Life. Tell us, you were in Seattle recently taking some amazing shots with the Space Needle in the background. Why should guys look at SuitClubVIP.com?
Yeah, did you see those pictures? A couple of them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I told the lady taking pictures, I said, make me look good. Come on, it's going to take some work. But it's a new startup company. It's got some great people backing it from the Seattle area, just an entrepreneur and his team of people that, you know, kind of grew up in the fashion world. And it's basically it's a company based around custom suits. You know, for your first, you become a member and you get measured. And then anytime you want, you go on a website, you've got every pattern imaginable, every color, you know, every possible fabric down to the colors of the buttons you want on your, you know, lapel. And basically you can order right there and they go to work right there and deliver it to you in a very short amount of time. And, you know, you can be pretty conservative and get a real nice suit for a reasonable price, or you can get pretty out there and go with the best suit that money can buy, and you're going to spend a little bit. So there's a big wide range to choose from, but it's just something I got into, and I'm not a suit guy. These guys started making me some suits and I really started liking them. I'm like, I actually like these. You know, I'm not used to having this nice of suits. So I got into that. That's just one venture. I've got a couple other things on the horizon. And like I said, I'm just trying to keep busy, in the meantime, I'll do some speaking here and there and some charity work when I can to give back to, you know, what the game has given me. So I'm kind of doing a lot of different things, but I'm having a good time and I'm a happy papa.
Well, Brett, I noticed that Aaron is also involved in Suit Club, and as well, a former guest here on the Double, Walter Thurman, former Seahawk, great cornerback there. So a lot of good names involved in Suit Club. BrettBooneBook.com. You can find that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, all kinds of places. Brett Boone, we thank you for your time tonight and enjoy the fact that you're joining us and giving us your insight. And we look forward to having you on in the future.
Okay, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
All right.
There goes former Seattle Mariner second baseman Brett Boone doing great things outside of the game of baseball with his book, Home Game, and repping SuitClubVIP.com.
Yeah, that book, man, $14 on Kindle, man. That's a great deal. And you know, that's going to be one of the books that I'm going to take a look at, man. I mean, he's talking about it, you know, his family. And, of course, you know, just think about that. Sitting at the table, got dad, you know, grandpa, and, you know, they're talking about all the great pitchers that they faced and how tough things were. And, you know, and then, of course, Brett and Aaron playing in the league, and, you know, they get to tell their stories. That's amazing, man. That doesn't happen all the time, Sean.
You know, the one question I didn't ask and wanted to was, has he had offers? And I'm sure he has, to be an analyst for
some team or some TV network, radio network, somebody out there has to want his knowledge. And obviously he's talking of speaking in the near future. And obviously from what we just heard, he can speak. So therefore you would think somebody would want to hire him as an analyst for their, like I said, TV, radio, or some form of broadcast.
Yeah, I'm thinking that he probably declined it, you know, at the moment to write his book. I mean, of course, Brett being modest, you know, he's saying that, you know, he wanted the promoter to make him look good. I mean, come on, for those of you who've seen Brett Boone, yeah, handsome young man. He's got the look. He talks the talk, walks the walk. I mean, yeah, I'm sure that he's got some offers going forward in the future to be an analyst. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to have guest number two. He has been on the double before, none other than Nick Ferguson. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express. Everybody get up.
Are you tired of the gym scene in Tri-Cities, Washington? Tired of seeing all those ridiculous gym selfies? If you are ready to work on a better you, Power Alley Performance is the place you can reach your goals. From one-on-one personal training to group fitness sessions, the trainers at Power Alley Performance will help motivate you every step of the way. Trainers DJ and Lamont have a wealth of knowledge and experience that they are ready to share with you. Call Power Alley today at 509-554-4785 and tell them the Double S Express sent you for a complimentary half-hour session. Visit PowerAlleyPerformance.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. And let's go back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two. And that is none other than former NFL player Nick Ferguson. Nick, thanks for your time tonight.
Holy smokes. I just figured since it was the holy smokes, you know, hey, might as well just throw that out there. Holy smokes.
You know what,
Nick? I knew that was your favorite. I knew that was your favorite, brother.
Yes.
Hey, Nick, we're going to ask our engineer there to take your voiceover right there, and that will be our ad going forward, man. Hey. I like how you said that.
Hey, listen, man. Hey, listen, I aim to entertain anytime you guys have me on, and I'm never going to change who I am.
There you go. Well, hey, man, the NFL season is underway, and man, who would have thought? You know, maybe you, the Denver Broncos, you know, where they had a juxtaposition with quarterbacks in the offseason. And, you know, that was a big question mark starting the season. But, man, they are 2-0 right now. I mean, is that a surprise to you?
No, I'm not surprised. I would definitely say, well, this is, you know, what I anticipated. I knew that first game against Carolina, that was going to be very emotional for both sides, and you know, you're hoisting up trophies and handing out rings, and the game against the Colts, that's always a tough game. Andrew Luck, even with deficiencies on the defensive side of the ball, he's always able to play the Denver Broncos competitive. And just looking at the fact of what they have on the defensive side of the ball, we knew Von Miller signed a huge contract, which I think was very warranted, especially after, you know, he's giving the defensive MVP of the Super Bowl. But, you know, they're very talented on the defensive side of the ball. We saw it in the Carolina game in the opener. We saw it yesterday with the Indianapolis Colts. And as long as they stay healthy, you know, they definitely have a shot, even with Trevor Siemian at the quarterback position, because when you look at what Coach Kubiak wants to do with his offense, it's kind of a run-first mentality. We run the ball to set up the pass and set up the bootlegs, the waggles, and all the deep throws down the field. And all we ask, Trevor Siemian, all we're asking you to do, we need you to be our Trent Dilfer. Don't do any more than what we're asking you to do. Don't turn the ball over. Go out there and execute and leave it to the defense to win the game for us.
And the defense is doing their job indeed. And, man, I can't begin to tell you how impressive they look. I mean, right out the gate, Von Miller with a – I mean, his presence was felt all day yesterday. Now, tell us about Ware. Now, I know that he it sounds like he injured himself. Is he going to be out for a specific period of time?
Well, right now it's being called a forearm injury, and he is said to be out 2 to 4 weeks. And that's sad to see a guy who's probably on the downside of his career. He's just kind of pretty much a transitional player at this point, comes in on third down to just kind of give us some added pass rush. But now that means you have guys like Shane Ray. This is why he was drafted. He was drafted to come in to be the opposite bookend to Von Miller. And the guy, Shaquille Barrett, here's another guy who can get after the pressure, after the quarterback with edge pressure. And they're going to need both of these guys to be interchangeable, because we know what Von Miller is. And later on, everyone will figure it out. If they haven't figured it out by now, we need to chip him. We need to do something to slow him down, because in the first two games we've seen thus far, he's giving those offensive tackles nightmares. And I'm sure they're having nightmares right now. I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals are up next, and I'm sure that, you know, Marvin Lewis is showing his guys the film and saying, listen, if there's one guy we have to slow down, we need to neutralize for us to have the ability to push the ball down the field, it is Von Miller.
Now, Nick, tell me about Shane Ray. Of course, we know Shane Ray being, you know, out of Missouri. Of course, there were some, you know, he had a few problems before coming into the league. I believe that he's rectified that situation. He was very apologetic in that situation. Is he going to be, you know, one of these players that's going to be a key player on the defensive side?
Well, yeah, he's definitely. He has no choice at this point. I mean, on the depth chart, he's behind DeMarcus Ware, so it's kind of the next man up. So they expect a lot out of Shane Ray. And I spent some time with Shane Ray, you know, last summer when I was doing the coaching internship with the Denver Broncos. And he wants to put his past behind him. He realizes that he made a mistake. And I told him, I said, listen, in order for you to put that behind you, you have to go out and live your life off the field and make sure you don't make any mistakes. But more importantly, when you're on the field, you take it to the max every single time, because one thing we know in our country, we will forgive our superstars, especially if they're making plays. So Shane Ray definitely has that ability. He's gotten better since last year, especially with his quickness and his hands and being able to play that pass rushing position. You have to be able to shoot your hands, but more importantly, once you shoot your hands and that tackle sets his feet and he stones you, you have to have a counter move to come back to, and he's been working on that with DeMarcus Ware. So I'm sure he's going to be ready to go. He's going to be tested, because that's what you do when you put a guy out there for the first time and he's a full-time starter. But I have no doubt that with Von Miller on the other side, is going to make Shane Ray a better player.
Nick Ferguson joining us here on the Double. And Nick, what has surprised you going into the NFL season 2 weeks in as we move forward to week 3?
Well, the one thing I've been really impressed about, and I heard some people, they were not as impressed, or they're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and that's Dak Prescott. I've been really impressed with him, and I know coming in, he was a late draft choice, and as usual, we would say, well, it's only the preseason. We haven't really seen what he can do. The system is vanilla. But from what I saw in the preseason to what I'm seeing now, he's the same person, and this kid is for real. And, you know, a lot of talk has been about, you know, Tony Romo when he gets back. All I have to say, when Romo gets back, Jason Garrett, they're going to have to make a very tough decision, because do you try to put Tony Romo back into the mix, or you just say, you know what, Tony, it was great. You sustained a lot of injuries. We're trying to look out for you. Dak Prescott is our quarterback of the future. We know Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones loves to do it big because everything is bigger in Dallas or in the state of Texas. So this kid has the potential to take this organization to a different height that it hasn't been in some time. You got to think about it. Yes, he's got a great offensive line, but now you're talking about a rookie quarterback with a rookie running back, and then looking at the deficiencies on the defense and the people that they're missing. No Gregory, no Rondo McClain. So he's doing that just off of sheer athletic ability. And I like what I've seen from Dak Prescott thus far.
Now, Nick, do you think that decision on the quarterback in Dallas will come from head coach Jason Garrett or from the guy that runs everything in Dallas, Jerry Jones?
Well, you just said a mouthful. Jason Garrett doesn't make a decision. You know, everything that happens happens from top to bottom, and it starts and ends with Jerry Jones. They call it Jerry World for a particular reason. And people have said it before. Jason Garrett is like a puppet. I mean, he's a head coach by title, but Jerry makes all the personnel decisions. Heck, he's the owner and he's the GM. So to see a guy like Dak Prescott out there playing well for his team, even though they're 1-1, Jerry's thinking about the bigger picture. How well can we market our team? How can we market the Dallas Cowboys even more than they're marketed up to this point? So when Tony comes back, they have to face that decision. They have to make that choice. Every team and every player at some point has to make a choice with their marquee player. At some point, Bill Belichick and New England are going to have to make that decision when it comes to Tom Brady. So if I'm Jerry and I'm looking at a young stud we have at quarterback, I mean, he has the poise of a veteran. He moves well in the pocket. He sees the field well. And his vertical throws are some of the best throws I've seen a rookie, you know, in my years playing and watching the game of football. So there's so many things that you can build on with Dax. Now it's a matter of putting pieces around him to make the Dallas Cowboys a true competitor.
Nick Ferguson joining us here on The Double. Now, Nick, every time we have you on the show, it seems like you are progressing yourself more and more since walking away from professional football. Now, you have a show. It's at NFL on TuneIn Radio. And the show's called First and 10, and that's 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sundays with Brian Weber. Man, what's that show going to be about?
Well, you know, the First and Goal show, basically what we do, we kind of go like DirecTV, the Red Zone channel, and we just go highlight, you know, all the games, bring them to you live, and, you know, breaking them down as far as what's taking place, keeping you up to date, because we know we are in a social media age. Everyone has a smartphone or iPad, but when you're driving, you cannot get that type of information. So we try to give you game-by-game coverage so that you never miss a game, a highlight, a touchdown, or impactful moment at any time. So that's what we do from 1 p.m., and we take you up to the late game on NBC. So, yeah, that's what we're doing. It's really exciting. I'm having fun doing it. It takes me a little bit out of my element, but it is football, and I love doing it.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely be tuning in to listen to you and Brian Weber. Now, Nick, man, we've talked about the first two games of the season. Let's kind of look into your globe here and see, where do you see the Denver Broncos here after the first four games? Who's going to be the surprise team, and who's going to be the team that you feel, you know, is disappointing?
Well, for me, let's start with the Denver Broncos. I mean, they have two road back-to-back road games coming up. The first is definitely another test for them, again on the road against the Cincinnati Bengals, who are coming off a tough loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers. No Vontaze Burfict. He'll be back for the fourth game, so they don't have to worry about that. But this still is a team that's really physically, they've always been good on the defensive side of the ball. Andy Dalton is trying to, I guess, get his team to that second playoff game so people can stop saying, hey, listen, Marvin Lewis and the Red Rocket, they can't get out of the first round. So they're going to want to play that game tough against the Broncos. And if you look back over the two times they have played the Broncos, they've actually won and played the Broncos pretty tough. So this is not going to be a cakewalk for them. But if the Broncos still want to show that they are a team to be reckoned with in the AFC, they have to be able to go on the road and beat a good team like Cincinnati, who doesn't want to lose two in a row. Now, as far as my most disappointing team thus far, that would be the Seattle Seahawks. I'm coming into the season. I didn't see the Seattle Seahawks losing the way that they lost against the Rams, not having the ability to score points and put points on the board. But the most disappointing team, believe it or not, at the end of the day, at the end of the season, that is, you know, could be these Los Angeles Rams when you're only able to muster 9 points in two games and you can't really, you know, put points on the board other than field goals. That's going to be really tough. Now, I don't expect this team to win every game like a baseball score. And I know there were whispers early in the week before they beat the Seattle Seahawks. Well, what was going to happen with Jeff Fisher? So there's whispers about a contract extension, and maybe they were waiting until the team finally had a win in order to give him that extension. I don't believe that would be a right idea, a right move. You wait to midseason so you can see what type of team that you have, and maybe by that time Jared Goff would have played, and then you can give Jeff Fisher a contract. But I'll say this. I'm going to jump out there, guys, and say this is the New England Patriots, you know, with Tom Brady missing the four games and no Jimmy Garoppolo, and Jacoby Brissett has to come in relief because Garoppolo injured his AC joint. This team, looking at them with Garoppolo in the center, and just wait till Tom comes back because Tom has a grudge. Because Tom is upset about Deflategate, the fact that he had to sit out four games. This team is going to be prime and ready for another run in December. Trust me.
It's good stuff.
I know that's a mouthful, fellas, but hey, listen.
You can tell I paused, man, because that. Man, I do hear you, though, with New England coming back. I'm looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers right now, and, you know, they're missing a couple of key players, and they look like they're firing on all cylinders also. So, you know, where do you see those two teams in a head-to-head matchup?
Well, you see, here's the funny thing that's really interesting. If we were to look back at the past, let's say, 6 years, you know, we would see the same teams in the AFC. The Broncos are always there. The New England Patriots are always there. And you just mentioned it, the Pittsburgh Steelers. These same teams are going to be there again this year. And watching the Pittsburgh Steelers play, you know, I don't know if they have enough to kind of get to the Super Bowl, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did. But when you look at the style of play that they've always played, and we're talking going back from, you know, Bill Cowher to Chuck Noll, it's always been the same thing. We play great defense and we run the ball. The philosophy hasn't changed. And the one thing I haven't seen yet, other than inclement weather, and we saw that against in the Cincinnati game, I don't believe there's a DB or DBs plural that can slow down Antonio Brown. And as long as he's healthy, then it's going to make it really difficult to kind of shut this Pittsburgh Steelers team out. So right now it's kind of a three-horse race. But as we get to the back end of the season, teams are going to start to separate themselves. But New England is going to be the team that edges out everyone else in a bitter end.
Now, Nick, with your NFL expertise, and of course, you know, we're a Pacific Northwest-based show. A lot of our listeners are in the PNW, Seattle-Tacoma area. And you mentioned the Seahawks, a disappointment, losing to the Rams, which I'll agree, not only as a broadcaster, but as a Seahawk fan. That was indeed a disappointment, not getting that win, not having any offense down there in Los Angeles. But that being said,
The Rams have won four of the last five meetings against the Seahawks. A, have you ever been a part of a playing a team to where no matter what you did, they just seem to have your number? And B, how do the Seahawks rectify that the next time they play the Rams in Seattle?
Well, you know, I have played in my career. I played against a guy who was a thorn in my side, and he wore a coach uniform, and his number was 18. And it didn't make a difference whether I was playing for the Jets, whether I was playing for the Houston Texans, or I was playing for the Denver Broncos. He was always there. He was like my boogeyman, if you will. We could not escape this guy. And it's one of those things where you go into the game and you know, okay, well, listen, I prepared for this game. We study. We're ready. And, you know, we're going to win this game. And then sometimes there are plays that occur in the game and on a consecutive basis, and you're like, you know what, here we go again. And Peyton Manning was that guy. And even though they never really had a quality defensive unit in the time that he's playing, what I mean by that, they didn't have a consistent top five defense. But it was just the belief in 18 that he could win those ball games. So 18 was a thorn in our side. Now, as far as the Seattle Seahawks are concerned, the first thing is getting Russell Wilson healthy. I think that was kind of a major part of why they weren't able to get into a flow of the offense, was that he just had his ankle stepped on, you know, maybe 7 days earlier. So you can medicate, you can put it in a boot, you can do limited practice, but it's really hard when you're a mobile quarterback and you rely on your athletic ability to escape the pocket and move the ball down the field. So that was the first thing. Now, I was surprised that they were not able to run the ball because, you know, Tom Cable, he prides himself on having a well-coached offensive line. So watching that front seven of the Rams, and that's a good bunch they have, but I didn't think that they would be able to control the line of scrimmage like they did. And, you know, the wide receivers have an inability to separate. And I know when you look at Curtis and you look at Doug Baldwin, these are not household names as far as wide receivers, but they're decent receivers. Now, we can argue and say, well, are they number one receivers, or are we talking the fact that Seattle has two number two receivers? We can argue that. But all I know is those guys need to be able to separate from DBs down the field. And I'm sure, you know, Darryl Bevell, he's going to fix this. We're not going to see a long season of this type of play with the Seahawks. And let's be totally honest. Every time the Rams play the Seahawks, it's as though they have their number. It's like they're built to beat the Seahawks. And you have to wonder if that's kind of a mental thing going into the game. And it almost seems like the Rams can lose every game of the season, but the games they want to win for sure against the Seahawks. I don't know if that has anything to do with Pete Carroll and Jeff Fisher and the whole USC thing. I don't know, but they just elevate their level of play with the Seahawks. And I am with this, guys. It was really a crazy atmosphere. The Rams are playing at home. They're in their throwback uniforms, which should be their regular uniforms. You got CeeLo Green singing the national anthem. There are celebrities all over the place. LeBron James is sitting in the press box. So those guys were energized and ready to play. And I think Seattle may just kind of underestimate the Rams and just came in a little flat.
Nick Ferguson with his expertise here on the double. And you can find Nick Sundays, 1 p.m. Eastern on NFL, at NFL on TuneIn Radio with Brian Weber. Nick Ferguson, you've done a lifetime of football. Your expertise is immense. We thank you for your time, your insight. One final question. Your Super Bowl prediction after 2 weeks is who?
Wow, that's kind of early. The Patriots for sure. And, you know, I was thinking on the AFC side, I was thinking Seattle, because I'm hoping that Seattle can definitely turn things around. So I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to ride with Seattle and New England. And I'll say this is why, because Seattle lost to the Rams twice. but they still were able to make it to the playoffs. And because of that, they're built for this. This is the type of team that they are. And the biggest thing you need to win a Super Bowl or playoff game is defense. And they have that. Just think about it. How many points they gave up last week? How many points they gave up this week? So that all they need is a couple of extra points and some field goals, and they win these games. So I'm still gonna ride with Seattle and the New England Patriots. That'll be a great Super Bowl.
So a rematch of 2 years ago, this time the Super Bowl in Houston.
Absolutely, man. Think about the 2 weeks leading up to that game. You know, all the coverage, you can always go back. You can always go back to the failed attempt. Why didn't they give it the Beast Mode? Then they can just kind of go interview Beast Mode at some Skittles factory with a hairnet on, asking him why he thinks he didn't get the ball. To interview Malcolm Butler and show all those replays. It'd be great. It'd be great for the league. It'd be great for football.
Well, let's not forget the Patriots host the Seahawks on Sunday Night Football deep into, I believe, November. So that could be a preview of Nick Ferguson's prediction for the Super Bowl in Houston at NRG Stadium, a place Nick Ferguson knows extremely well.
Absolutely, my friends. That's November 13th.
Well, Nick, we appreciate your time, your insight, and hey, all we want to know is what is the latest with Uncle Lester, because he is hilarious, and your secondary perspective on YouTube needs to get fired back up.
Well, you know what? Uncle Lester is planning something real soon. He's telling me now that he's going to have a video out by this weekend. So hopefully I'll send it, shoot it to you guys, and you guys share it with people and enjoy.
Deal. Look forward
to
it.
Well, Nick, we would appreciate Uncle Lester's perspective on Sean and Sean for sure. Thank you so much for your time tonight, Nick. Your great insight. Your story is amazing. And as you said, go Seahawks to the Super Bowl in Houston.
All right. Let's see if those Hawks can get there. Don't make me right. Don't make me wrong.
Hey, another thing, Nick, 18 was everybody's boogeyman.
Man, God, 18, man. I still have nightmares every time I see a Papa John's commercial.
Hey, Nick, one final question. The Oakland Raiders, how close are they to being respectable?
I think this team is really close. This team, this is one of the teams 2 years ago that I said that they would surprise a lot of teams. They're still my dark horse team and out in the AFC West. You know, knowing that Jack Del Rio, you look at the past 2 weeks talking about Riverboat Gambler. I mean, he's laying it all on the line. Like, his job, you know, he might not have a job tomorrow. But they have everything you need. Look at the past 2 weeks. They scored a combined, more than 40-something points. So we know what they can do from an offensive standpoint. The only problem is they need their defense to catch up. Their defense has to now start slowing people down. I mean, Sean Smith, he was brought there for a reason, to lock down other teams' number one receivers. But Julio Jones had a field day. So if they can get those kind of issues situated as far as on the outside the numbers and corners perspective, this is definitely a team that can definitely make a lot of noise, because you look at, you know, the fact of where the Broncos are. Yes, we don't really know what Trevor Siemian is. And then you look at Kansas City. You know, this is a team that has a tendency to start slow. If they don't start fast, then we see what happens. We saw the game with the Houston Texans. And San Diego, I have no idea what they are. You know, the only way that I can call San Diego, I call them, they're the mystery meat of the AFC West. And what I mean by that is, you ever take a piece of food or something, put it in an aluminum foil and stick it in the refrigerator, you come back and you forget it, and you come back 2 months later and you're like, what's this? Open it up, you have no idea what it is. It's morphed into something entirely different. That's the San Diego Chargers right now. Because from week to week, I don't know what I get. So, but it's going to be interesting in the West, but still, That Raiders team, they're right on the cusp, but they're still my dark horse team to win this division.
Well, somebody needs to put an APB out, Nick, on the Oakland Raiders defense because, once they get that situated, you're right. They'll be a team to be reckoned with, not just in the AFC but in the NFL.
Absolutely.
Well, Nick, my last question is, if Ken Norton called, could you still suit up?
We could use you.
Here's the thing. I could still suit up, but there's two underlying factors. One, I would have to talk with my wife about it, right? Because I'm a smart man.
Exactly. Two, as soon as she saw the dollar signs.
Right. Talk to my wife. And then second, could I play in today's NFL? And what I mean by that, will I make money or will I lose money? Because the way that I play, that I grew up and I was taught how to play the game of football, you can't play that way in today's NFL. So I would have to try to learn on the go. But, when you train an attack dog to attack and he bites, you can't get mad at the dog. So.
Now, I know that we've said one last question, for the 10th time, but you're hitting some points here. And for you being a defensive back and, me being a Raiders fan, tell me what's going on with Sean Smith. Is that something that is Ken Norton Jr.'s deal, or is that just Sean Smith in his head?
Well, see, with Sean Smith, he's a big corner. He's got long arms. And I know the idea is that because of his size, he should be able to cover outside. And he struggled a little when he was in Miami. He showed some deficiencies when he was with Kansas City. So sometimes if your technique isn't sound, it's going to show up when you face top receivers. And, we live in a world where we like to coin people with elite quarterback titles or a shutdown corner, which I believe that's something that we definitely have to redefine because a lot of people don't know what that is. But, Sean Smith is looked at because of his size as being a shutdown corner. And I think for him, it's, just kind of relaxing, playing fundamentals and just kind of working your technique and playing within the framework of the defense. I think that's where, he gets himself in trouble. Ken Norton is trying to put him in situation to make plays, and when you have Khalil Mack and you have Bruce Irvin, the ball is going to come out quick. So maybe he's anticipating things entirely too quick and not really looking at them as they start to unfold, because the problem that you have playing in the secondary is your eyes. And the closer you play to the ball, the faster you have to be able to react. And sometimes, as a corner, you see things and you go to make a play. And then you see guys on the sideline talking to the safety or the defensive coordinator. And if you can have a microphone in that conversation, this is what you're going to hear. He would tell his coach, I saw something. I don't need you to see anything. What I need you to see is see the guy in front of you. What did he do? Don't start looking at the quarterback if you're in man-to-man. So I think he needs to be better, not just with his feet, and he needs to be better with his eyes.
Good stuff.
Nick Ferguson with his insight, intellect, and knowledge here on The Double. And you can follow Nick on Twitter at @NickFerguson_25 on Twitter. And, of course, we're all waiting for the next YouTube Nick Ferg show with Uncle Lester and everybody else involved. And, hey, Nick, if you want Sean or myself, which is also Sean, if you want either of us involved, hey, we will help you. We'll get it going. Sean Boyd down in the Bay was at the Oakland Raider game. You could help out. I worked the Seahawk home game last week. So, anything you need, we're here for you here on The Double. Thank you for your time, brother.
Well, thank you for having me, and I might have to take you guys up on that offer.
Sounds good, man.
All right, fellas. Nick, you guys have a nice evening. It's always great when we get together.
All right, it is.
And you can listen to Nick at NFL on TuneIn. The show is First and Goal, 1 p.m. Eastern,
on Sundays, which is 10 a.m. on the West Coast with Brian Weber and our guest, Nick Ferguson, bringing great things in the NFL world.
Thank you, fellas. Appreciate you. Enjoy the rest of the Monday night game.
All right, you too.
All right.
There goes Nick Ferguson. And Matt, Sean, he was talking about the Monday night game. It just got a little interesting. It looks like, man, the Philadelphia Eagles have just been running roughshod on the Chicago Bears. Now the Bears get a long punt return to put themselves closer. I mean, it still looks a little out of reach, but, man, the Philadelphia Eagles, Carson Wentz. Who would have thought that these guys would be off to a great start?
Makes you think and wonder what the Rams are doing, putting Goff on the bench.
Yeah, well, you know, I've seen Jared Goff, and, of course, he's beloved here in Northern California. Saw him in the preseason. I think he needs a little more tutelage before he gets thrown into the fire. I could only imagine if he would have played yesterday. I think things might have been a little
bit. Time out, Sean Boyd. Mr. Boyd. Sean E. Boyd. Time out. Look, Jared Goff, I witnessed him in the fall almost a year ago, probably 10 months ago, go up against the Washington State Cougars.
Yeah, threw for a gazillion yards, I know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I was working that game in Pullman, it was October-ish, you know, fall and pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns and Sleepy Hollow and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
That guy threw for, as you said, a bazillion yards. And he did that the entire college career of his time at Cal. And for the Rams to take him as high as they did, which was what number, Sean?
Yeah, he was the number one pick, no doubt. But
the number one pick, the first pick of the entire NFL draft. And the first week of the season, he's inactive? Seriously?
Well,
Did you
watch any of his preseason games? Because he was getting thrown around, and he was gun-shy after a while. And that's how he injured himself, was in the preseason game. I believe it was the Dallas game, the very first game. So, I mean, yeah, you know, I get it. He's a great, great college.
So what you're saying is you believe he was really injured, and that is why they had him inactive for week one, and then he was a little bit better, just a smidge better, so they had him as the backup quarterback against the Seattle Seahawks yesterday for the home opener, the return to football of the professional rank in Los Angeles at the LA Memorial Coliseum, which has hosted multiple Olympic events.
Yeah, you know,
this guy is injured and he can't play? Really?
Yeah, you bring up a valid question, because most of the time when somebody's injured, it doesn't keep them from, you know, that what's their destiny. I get that. I understand that. But here's the other thing.
Has Russell Wilson sat out a day?
But here,
a day of game or even a day of practice in 5 years?
This is my point. So not only did he get injured, but according to his coaching staff, this is what I believe, after the injury, he had a look in his eyes that was just shell-shocked. I don't think the speed of the game, I don't think that it's caught up to him yet. And so, you know when somebody's prepared to lead you to victory. And I don't think he has that in his eyes. I think he's a little gun shy. He didn't expect that, again, that type of speed coming from NFL football players. And it'll happen. He'll get there. But I just think he needs to sit a little and mature with the clipboard before they actually throw him into the fire early.
Well, that's a decent opinion, and a lot of people have it. But I will ask you this, and I will just state. You have the option of one, Case Keenum, or Jared Goff, who has played Division I starter, let's go Pac-12 football, and you're going to give the reins to Case Keenum? Granted, he got the win against the Seahawks. I'll give him that. Whether or not he did it, that's debatable. But okay, the Rams won the game. But the gunslinger that is Jared Goff that we all saw in the Pac-12 last fall is sitting there waiting to get a shot.
Well, you know, here's the other thing that we have to look at. Todd Gurley, has he had a successful two games thus far? Because last I checked, I mean, he's looked very anemic in 2 weeks. Now, this is the reason, I believe, is that you have a weak offensive line in the Los Angeles
Rams. By you, is that the Rams or the Seahawks? Because I would say both, yes.
Yeah, so the Los Angeles Rams have a weak offensive line, and Todd Gurley hasn't had a good game yet. Why would I throw my franchise quarterback, the quarterback of the future, into the fire to get him just beat to all you know what? Or why don't I just let him sit, let my team mature so that, you know, me as a play caller or a offensive coordinator can have enough confidence to say, okay, offensive line is ready. They're opening up holes. Their pass protection is good. Hey, why don't we throw old Case Keenum in there so he can get beat around so that the offensive line can mature? Then we put our quarterback into play. Why would I put my franchise quarterback in to where he could just get kicked to crap? I think that's what Jeff Fisher's looking at. And, you know, you don't want to make your franchise quarterback gun-shy with an anemic offensive line.
Well, Case Keenum is gum-shy. Gun-shy, gum-shy, G-U-N, G-U-M, both ways. He doesn't want to throw the ball because he doesn't know who's going to be open. And I don't know if, yeah, I mean, Case Keenum. The fact that Case Keenum,
he's the scout team quarterback,
technically beat the Seattle Seahawks.
Don't get me started on that.
Get you started. You're a Seahawks fan. You're just gonna laugh. I'm the one that's gonna jump off maybe a bridge, okay? Because I'm the Seahawks fan. You're the one that was like, well, the Seahawks are like the Seahawks and they're going to suck anyway. No, they're not. Who said on our show tonight we'll be in the Super Bowl? That's a veteran, Nick Ferguson.
Well,
saying
first of all,
Seattle Seahawks will represent the National Football Conference, which means the Raiders, your Oakland Raiders, not yet Las Vegas, your Oakland Raiders could represent the AFC. Well, not what Nick said, but they could.
Well, first of all, I don't say the Seahawks are who they are. That's not an accurate quote. What I've said is that and here's one of the things that Nick piqued my curiosity with in his prediction, because when he initially said it, I was like, okay, you know, what's in his cup? But he has a valid point. The Seattle Seahawks in the first 2 weeks defensively, and this is, everybody knows that Seattle is who they are because of the Legion of Boom. I know that we talk about Russell Wilson.
Timeout. It's not about the LOB.
I believe that their defense, because they are solid defense, keeps them in the game so that the offense can actually pull it out. It's been proven. I mean, if you don't have a good defense, then there's no way that you're going to go to the Super Bowl. So when Nick said that, I said, yeah, you know, I could see that. Where the problem lies with the Seahawks is, and you and I have talked about this before, and I mentioned this, we didn't put the onus, or I saw it. But offensively, we see Russell Wilson have this. Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, man. You know what? Stevie Wonder could see this. But we put so much onus on Russell Wilson, on him being so great. Why? Because, my gosh, he's handsome.
Because the stats say he is.
Well, listen to this.
No, don't listen. The facts. the stats point to the last 5 years, the best quarterback in the NFL entirety from 2012 forward is Russell Wilson. End of story. You can say I don't agree. Okay, that's fine. That's your opinion, which spells opinion.
Okay.
But the facts state the last four or five years from when Russell was anointed the starter in Seattle after he beat out one Matt Flynn, who you know from his Oakland Raider, you know, month or two, which was about the amount of time he spent in Seattle. Russell Wilson is second to none in winning percentage, in not only winning percentage, but amount of victories, passing completion percentage, you name it, rushing yards as a quarterback. I mean, say what you want. The man's been to not one but two Super Bowls and won one of them. So you can downplay what he's done. You can downplay him. The bottom line is he's done what 98% of quarterbacks have not. And as I told you off the air in previous days, during the broadcast, I don't know if you got it in, well, obviously you didn't get it in the Oakland market, but the rest of the country got the A game from Fox, which was the first home game for the Rams hosting the Seattle Seahawks. Yes, we know the Rams won. Rams have beaten the Seahawks like in the last forever, but whatever. So what's happening here is
I'm listening.
So
here, let me explain something to you as you went down memory lane with Russell Wilson. As I was explaining to you before, Russell Wilson is not going to win you the games that he has in the past. And here's the reason why.
Don't cut me off. You're smoking. I let you talk,
Sean Wally. Now, here's what I was trying to explain to you and our listeners that are trying to figure out what the heck you're talking about. The reason why the Seattle Seahawks aren't going to do what they have done in the past is because Marshawn Lynch is no longer in the backfield.
Let me tell you why.
Hold on.
Fine. I'll let you, but I will drop you. Go ahead.
You have gushed enough about Russell Wilson, and I will not take anything away from Russell Wilson's past and what he has done. But what Nick Ferguson explained earlier as far as the injury is concerned, that is something that it needs to be reckoned with. Now, when I told you earlier, when you and I have talked about this, I had mentioned to you that Russell Wilson has not, he has had a clean bill of health through his career. At a matter of time, it's going to catch up with him. You laughed at me. You mocked me. But what happened in the first week? He got his ankle stepped on. Now, he did throw 27 to 43, but it was under duress. And when he played yesterday against the Rams, he was under that same duress, and there was a lot of pressure. Now, you can throw all the numbers you want, Sean Wally, but when the game is on the line, Russell Wilson had one TD, and that was 2 weeks ago. So he had no TDs yesterday. So at some point, he's going to have to step up. Why is that? It's because their running game is not the same without Marshawn Lynch. Defenses had to prepare for Marshawn Lynch. They don't have to prepare for Thomas Ross or Michaels. Those guys have to earn their dough before they have defenses that have to scout for them. The Seahawks don't have a legitimate running game right now, which is causing problems for them, and that's the reason why they scored 12 points in week one and three yesterday. This is the team that's going to the Super Bowl, and they have 15 points with your illustrious super quarterback. It's bigger than that. It's more than that. It's Marshawn Lynch being out of that offense. The defense is going to continue to do what they do, but until those two running backs that you think are so great do something, then they're going to struggle. That's it. That's what it's about. It's not about Russell Wilson and his gazillion yards and how he runs around and floats around in the pocket. They have to have a solid offense to get to that next level. They don't have it just yet. And just like Nick Ferguson said, hopefully they will. Maybe they'll get it right. But right now, 15 carries for 66 yards and no touchdowns by one Chris Michaels, that's not going to do it. So they're going to have to figure it out. And right now, it's going to be, if they continue to do what they're doing, it's going to be a long season. And that's it. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, you can get as flabbergasted.
It's not flabbergasted. It's the truth. It's the truth.
No, because you don't know the truth. And here's why. Nick Ferguson said the NFC representative in the Super Bowl will be who? The Seattle Seahawks, not the Oakland Raiders, because guess what? They're not at that level, and they're not A in the NFC.
Okay.
And regardless of that, time out.
This is how I know we have to
talk.
End the show.
Sean,
this is how I know we have to end
Sean,
the show.
I'd let you
I,
talk.
What,
boy.
What did I say about
boy.
The Oakland Raiders?
Boy, I let you talk. Boy. No, time out. I let you talk.
Wow.
Let me have the floor.
Wow, you can have it, man. I don't even want it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wow.
Your thought process on the Seahawks aren't going to win because Marshawn Lynch is gone is futile. And let me tell you why. The man only played 6-7 games of last season. I don't know if you forgot that or didn't know, but he was injured and out at least half of the entire season in 2015.
When did he
so
play? When did he play last year?
Finish.
What part of the season?
Beginning.
The beginning.
Thomas Rawls emerged because Lynch couldn't finish. He had the back issues starting in the Cleveland game when, he couldn't play and it was a last minute decision, his back issues, and things went beyond there, from there. And Lynch, a phenomenal runner. And yes, if he could play, he still could. If he wanted to, would we take him back? We have his rights, most likely. But he has said on multiple occasions, including in the last week, that he has no desire. He's retired. He's done. He was on Running Wild with Bear Grylls on NBC that, look, I'm out. I'm done. You know, it's my time. And not everybody gets to say when they're done, like a Michael Jordan. Is he a Michael Jordan? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he's going out when he wants to go out, not when he broke a hip. Like a Bo Jackson, not when he, tore a knee and can't walk anymore. Am I happy he's gone? Not necessarily. But you know what? Thomas Rawls did for Seattle immense things last year. He had number one in yards per carry, yards after contact. You can deny it. You can defute it. Look it up. The stats are real. Yes, Seattle's having issues out the gate. They've had issues out the gate for years. They have won only one time, the initial road game that Pete Carroll has coached the Seattle Seahawks. And yesterday in Los Angeles clearly was not one of them because of Kristen Michaels' fumble. Not just because of that, but that was a part of it, obviously. Driving for the potential score. And he fumbles in Rams territory. What can you do? And not a lot at that point.
We talked about
to say it's because Marshawn Lynch is gone. That's not even fair because Marshawn Lynch was gone half of the season in 2015. Thomas Rawls was the leading rusher in the NFL.
It is fair. We talked about this before. When was the last time you remember Marshawn Lynch fumbling? Go ahead, I'll wait. Because the thing is Chris Michaels.
Lynch fumbled. It's Kristen Michael. Let's get it right.
Christian Michaels. I'm sure he wouldn't. Anyways, Christian Michaels for you. Okay. Christian Michaels fumbled
Michael,
the football.
No S.
When was the last time Marshawn Lynch fumbled the ball in a key part of the game? I mean, yeah, you're brushing it over like
you're brushing it over. Nobody is questioning that.
Yeah. So wait. Hold on. My next question is: so you're telling me you're telling me that not fumble.
Come on now.
You're telling me that Thomas Rawls. So this should answer everything for me and all of our listeners in the Pacific Northwest wondering what the heck is going on with your blabbering. But are you telling me that Thomas Rawls or Christian Michael is better than Marshawn Lynch?
What? Nobody has ever said
okay,
that. You're
okay,
smoking
okay,
something.
Okay. No, I didn't know. I just asked you
it's
the question.
Potential. Are Lynch you is telling, a potential Hall of Fame running back.
Yeah, okay. So then when I said so this answers
he's
my 29. Point. So this answers my point when I say
Not at all.
Okay. Yeah, we've had enough. We've had enough. Oh, we've had two great guests on the show today. My God. Jeez. Brett Boone, former Major League Baseball player, and an awesome book that is coming at that has actually been out since May. Get out to get his book. And we had our second guest on the show, Nick Ferguson at NFL on TuneIn Radio. His show, it airs on Sundays, First and Goal, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. on the West Coast. That show is with Brian Weber. We've had some great, great talk, some interesting banter. Man, I can't even begin to tell you how if you guys are who are listening are thrown and wondering what in the world is going on, so am I. But it's been an awesome, awesome show. Man. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. As we always say, you're not in the game unless you
unless
take a
you
shot.
Take a shot.
And when you take that shot.
Marshawn Lynch took a shot. And he had, let's see here, 1, 4, 4 is 8 plus 3 plus 1. Okay. All right. He had 12 fumbles in his Seattle Seahawk career, Sean Boyd. So to say he never fumbled, that's ridiculous. I'm out.
And unless you take that shot, we hope that it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production. For Sean Wally in Selah, Washington, yours truly in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. Doug Newsom, our engineer extraordinaire in Paradise, California, you've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.